This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to stand because it's easier for me to just like project a little bit as well. But I'll just call this meeting of the Display Assembly to order. And as I say, I'll stand. I'll just sit down right like that. It's 12:18, and I'll just do a quick call. Are there any other late additions to the agenda? It's relatively brief but full in many other ways as well, too. Great. Looking over the minutes, were there any other additions, changes to the minutes? I think this is for our current seated folks. We'll go over the rest of that as well, too. Great. Can we just vote by unanimous consent? Is all those in favor of approving those minutes? Anyone opposed? And abstaining? No. Cool. So we'll enter those minutes in. Our clerk, Gabriella, is currently studying for finals, so we wish her well. And that's why she's unable to be here today, but we'll get those added there. All right, moving on to business of the day. So welcome, everyone. Again, excited to welcome our incoming employee assembly. It's a year and a half of work to really change over our structure, but we're here, and we're happy to see a lot of new faces on the table as well, too. So to get started, our last meeting of this session, we're welcoming Interim President Rawlings and Vice President Mary Opperman here to our meeting. So hello and welcome.
Thank
You're
you.
Seeing a lot more faces than normal, as again, we just expanded our group today, too. So for those of you that are just visiting us for the first time, our last meeting, we do have a regular visit from senior leadership about once a semester. So we did have some things that we were going to bring up with them, sent them ahead of time, and then again, just kind of like an open dialogue as well, too, about things that are happening in the different units that we represent and kind of how we can work together to, again, help the university out as well, too. So I guess I will turn it over to you a little bit to just kind of say hello, and I guess we do have some of those topics that we'd like to discuss as well, too.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Hunter Rawlings. Hunter Rawlings the third, and now I know why I was named the third. Three times coming back, but it's a real pleasure to get to know you all, and maybe we could start by having you tell me just a little bit about this big change you've made.
Sure.
So that I understand, because I'm not, frankly, very familiar with that. So it'd be good for me to know.
Sure. I was going to say, I'm sure this past few weeks have just been, let's catch up on
right.
what's happening.
Right.
So the Employee Assembly was formerly 19 members. There were a third that represented exempt staff members, a third that represented non-exempt staff members, a third that were at large, and a representative from Geneva. And so we'd operated under that way, I forgot for how long?
About 6 years.
And again, I think the original goal of it was to help as many staff members participate in shared governance as possible. But
right.
what ended up happening was that people kind of struggled with who they're representing, you know, who are they voicing opinions for.
What do you mean?
What was
the problem, in other words?
So I held an at-large seat, and so, you know, I think we look at shared governance as a representative structure. So I, in a sense, represented every single staff member on campus, which,
oh.
as you know, is a very 7,000 different ideas and viewpoints.
Right.
So we really looked at how can we make this a more effective organization.
I see.
And our restructuring meant that everyone now has a more defined constituent group. So based on the academic colleges and schools, based on the staff units, and based on different staff affinity groups.
So you're more tightly tied to the units.
Should be. Yep, that's
yeah.
that's our goal. For instance, I will now be representing ILR moving into the next legislative session. Folks are representing student campus life. We followed the colleague networking group, so there's representatives from the women's organizations, LGBTQ, veterans, again, the different colleges and units, there's HR, there's a bunch of different things. So it's just a little bit more focused on what we had before.
I see. Okay. And so now how large are you?
We're currently seated at 25, and we'll eventually be 28 once all the seats.
So it's much bigger.
Much bigger, about 10 folks. But I think for us, again, it provides a little bit more focus, whereas before it was, you know, what's happening at the university level, how do you report back? It was just kind of, well, I'll report to my own unit. We had, I think last time there were like 3 or 4 people from vet. There was, at one point, we had 4 people from hotel. So, again,
wow.
there were different units that were well represented.
Wow.
And so for us, it's how do we better disseminate information across the campus as well.
Right. Anybody want to add to that? Anybody want to give a little additional perspective on how you see the new format?
What are the other points
that's a really good point, because I think often representative groups are very good at delivering messages to, you know, the administration or something, but it's really hard to communicate to the constituencies because they're large. It's hard to reach people. It's hard to give them a sense of what you know from your meeting because they haven't been in such meetings. So that's tough. How do you try to get after that?
One of the things that I found, and this will be the start of my second term with the EA, and one of the things that I found is the EA has provided me with significantly more access to leadership. I can ask the questions that are on my mind, and the questions that are on my mind are largely the same questions that are on the mind of the constituent group that I represent. Because, again, I'm coming from that same place. I get those explanations, and then I can use that when I go back to discuss these changes, these decisions with my constituent group.
But how do you do that with your constituents? Because I assume that's a lot of people. I mean, do you email? Do you meet?
One of the largest means that I use right now is a tool called Yammer. I have several different groups that are cover my constituents. We also use Facebook, Skype for Business, email. But in large part right now, for my area, because it is so widespread, we use Yammer.
So I don't know anything about that at all. I teach ancient Greek. So what is that?
It's a business-focused tool that's very similar in format to Facebook, but it's internal to Cornell. And you can create groupings of people. And when you write to that group, it actually projects that to the group. People can get notifications from their group, respond to that. And that's actually proven to be the most effective way, because I'm in IT. We've made that a standard within our area.
Okay, great.
And we get that communication out really well spread.
Do a lot of you use that? Is that an effective tool? Okay. Anybody want to add anything? Okay, maybe we should start with a few of the questions.
Sure, that'd be great. So, again, the last meeting we had some just kind of generalized, kind of distilled the general questions that we have into some 4 points for Hunter and Mary. I guess the first one is, what are your plans and kind of goals as the interim president, and what does that look like for you as you fulfill this role?
Okay, so, you know, I did this job when I was 50, and then I did this job when I was 60. You know what the rest of the sentence is. I find it's harder to do this job now. I won't be more specific than that. I mean, the pace of the job is really fast. So for me, I mean, I do understand a lot about the job, and I'm hoping the third time around, you know, I'll start to get something right, but it is the pace problem. It is really tough. And as an example, I spent last week in New York City, 8 days actually, without my wife Elizabeth, and I was going constantly to meetings and stuff. And when the night comes on top of the day and you've got stuff at night too, I find the pace really tough, so I'm just trying to be personal here. it's demanding, but on the positive side, it's very fulfilling, because Cornell's an amazing place, and for me to get to see a lot of different people like you all, faculty and so on, is pretty exciting, and I have a lot of old friends here, so that's been quite positive. So what are the plans or goals? So I'm a short-termer. You know, this will probably be 9 or 12 months or something like that, because the search, which I think is the second question, is going to move ahead pretty rapidly. So when you're a short-termer, you don't try to do a whole lot of big things, clearly. You leave that to the next president. But I'm not one who likes to just tread water. I don't know how to tread water. you know, I'm so tall, my feet touch the bottom anyway, so I find that I like to try to get things done. And so we will try to work on a few things to make sure we keep up some momentum. It's been a tough 12 months for Cornell, you know, really tough 12 months and a tragedy. And so it's been harder to raise money under those circumstances. It's been harder for people to feel confident. So I think part of my job is to try to help stabilize, really, the situation. And I think of myself as a pinch hitter who's just in trying to help out in the shorter term. And based on the experience I have, I can at least provide some of that continuity back to earlier times. So that's kind of the way I think of the job. If anyone wants to ask something more specifically, please do. I'd like this to be a two-way conversation, not just a speech.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment for you. I came here after you left, and I'm on North Campus with all the freshmen.
Yes.
And so I hear your name all the time. I mean, you know, Hunter said this and Hunter did that. So it's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you. I hope what you hear isn't all bad, but...
No, it's positive.
That's good. No, it was the hardest thing, I think, that I had to confront the first time around was the student housing problem, because for many, many years, you probably know, Cornell had a kind of difficult situation in student housing, because we had freshmen living in College Town, freshmen living on West Campus, and freshmen living on North Campus. And that meant that the class was just totally scattered on campus and off campus, and it was hard for the class to have some cohesion. Whereas when we had the freshmen all on North, they developed a little sense of, okay, we're the class, we know each other, we see each other at Appel Commons, we see each other all the time, and I think that helped some. So now I think students take it for granted, right?
Some of them.
Yeah?
They shape up, weren't they?
Okay. All right.
With Oxford, do you see bringing the College of Business Exploration while you're here?
Yeah. So I don't know a whole lot about that because I just got here a few weeks ago, but obviously it's been a controversial matter on campus, and so I am a little bit familiar with that. I think now the faculty groups that are, or group that is planning the college, is doing really well. Is it a 9-person or a 12-person group with representation from all three? And I think their discussions are excellent. I gather they're making a lot of progress. They have terrific co-chairs for the committee. So what I'm understanding is that after a kind of rough rollout, things are now beginning to move in a pretty positive direction, and the alumni who have been very concerned about this are beginning to kind of see some of the advantages in the college, not just the disadvantages. But I think it's something we have to keep working at, because obviously when you try to do something like this, all kinds of people get very anxious about it, because they're worried that my college or my school is going to lose its identity, we're going to be swamped by the larger entity, if you know what I mean. So people get upset. And alumni, it's true of me too, we always look back on the college or university when we were there as the golden age, and you don't want to change the golden age. So what I like to say is alumni tend to think of their college as a museum to their youth.
Just had that conversation.
You did? So when I look at Haverford College, where I went to school, you know, I sort of in my mind make it a museum to my youth. You know, I want it to look just the way it did then because it was perfect.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It wasn't perfect, and especially by today's standards. So I have to sort of learn that. So I think that's what's hard for some alumni. They just think, look, I don't like these changes. So that's about as much as I know.
Can I add a couple of things?
Yeah, please.
So the leadership team almost formed. And Mitra Dutta has stayed true to his view, which is wherever possible, he's filling all the roles from inside. And so he's been placing people from the three schools into the roles, and they So they're bringing the people from the three schools together to figure out how to get the work done, the administrative work done. So the leaders of those units are now pulling people together. So Laura Sire had all the people that are going to report to her go out for a couple of days, and they are developing the strategies for the areas that report to her. And the same thing is happening in each of the areas, IT and all the infrastructure areas as well. So they're moving through each of the areas that marketing, communications, IT, you know, it's going to take them a while to do this, and it's a different way of getting something done, but it was what the president and provost said. They made a decision, and then they were going to work openly and in front of folks to put it together with involvement, and this is what that looks like. So people that are affected by the decisions are actually participating in how it will look, and they've been true to those decisions, so people have been participating. So every area is now either in a work team, now I'm talking about administration, are either in a work team or getting ready to be in a work team.
And I'll say, too, for the new folks, so Billy was unable to be here, but Billy is our Vice Chair of Communication, and so he's from the EA, and he also participated in the groups as well, too. So, again, we're actively involved in some things as well.
So I think, bottom line, no one should pretend that this was a smooth process. It wasn't a smooth process, so let's just put that on the table. But I think now it's getting pretty good, actually, and I think that committee's doing some great work, and apparently they have come together really well. So they've kind of taken off their hotel school hat or their Dyson school hat or their Johnson school hat, and they're trying to be a College of Business hat. So that's the positive side. The second question, I think, was related to the presidential search process, and there I can be fairly specific. The search committee is chaired by Jan Rock Zubro, one of our trustees. She chairs the executive committee of the board. Mary is very involved with the search, so she knows more than I do, but the important thing to convey to you is the committee hit the ground running. They had their first meeting on April the 25th or 26th. Jan said to the committee, we're going to move this thing rapidly. You know, we just did a search and unfortunately had this tragedy, but that means that we know a lot of the names that are out there. And I've spent the last 5 years in Washington working with the presidents and provosts of 62 leading research universities, so I know a lot of people as well and can be helpful. So I think the search is going to go rapidly. Now, you never know for sure. It could get gummed up along the way. But I think the hope is that the search committee will be ready to name a new president as early as the fall, which would be really great. Now, that's ambitious. As I say, they may not succeed, but I think that's the real hope. And I think they're going to push hard to do it. And, of course, I'm rooting for them. So just because you name someone, though, doesn't mean the person can start right away. Often there's a lag. Sometimes it's even a six-month lag. So it may be that the person, even if chosen in, say, October, wouldn't be able to start until the following summer. So that often happens. But maybe the person could start sooner. I don't know. So I think it's going to go pretty swiftly. Mary, do you want to add anything?
I went back and looked at all of the searches, the modern day searches, and they have taken between 6 and 9 months. So if this runs true to the pattern, we should be looking at a fall time. As Hunter said, you never know, but that's the hope.
Again, the other thing I'll add for new folks, at the last meeting, Tanya and I were both part of one of the presidential search committee like focus groups. So we generated some ideas that the staff would like to see in terms of candidates, and so we did present those to the groups, and then I assembled that list, and we'll be forwarding that over to the presidential search committee. So there's a full list of comments from the group, and also just we kind of vocalize our own things at the meeting as well, too.
I'm glad you raised that point, because Jan Zubrow, the chair, has been very open about saying she wants to hear people, and they've already done a, what was it, a two-day listening?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fourth
yeah.
And fifth.
So they mean that.
The goal is to have a search statement done by early June.
You mean a position description?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That will help with the candidate process.
Other questions with search committee things? So I'll say the other question I think that we had as well, too, it's a transitional period. I think everyone knows the challenges with that, but do you see any opportunities with the fact that you know, you're here as an interim president? What can we see as opportunities from this?
So that's a very good question, and I think one opportunity is actually based on the fact that I've done this before, and I have a lot of very close friends among the trustees and the former trustees, and that's a big help because it means I can get support from those people because they're very good friends of mine. I mean, we go back, you know, 20 years, and I can draw on them. And some of them have been really great in saying, thanks for coming back. What can I do to help? And when they say that, I answer. Here's what you can do to help. And so that's really nice because there's a lot of trust between us, and I think there's a sense among especially former trustees that, you know, we probably won't know the new president who comes, but we do know you, so we'd like to do some things while you're here that we might take more time to have to do with a new person. So I see that as a good positive.
So I think the last question we had from kind of the group was just how can the employee assembly be, you know, part of this process? How can we support this process? How can we be a partner?
So the best answer to that is to do just what we're doing right now. I mean, you know, I don't know most of you. This way I can get started. You don't know me, most of you, so we can start to establish a relationship. Mary's really good at making sure your voices are heard in day hall. I mean, she is good at that. So that's actually a big plus. And so we should communicate. Just as we were talking earlier, Jeremy was saying, you know, how do I communicate to my constituents? We need to communicate to each other so that we're very open. You said the phrase earlier, shared governance. It's a serious business, shared governance. It's not just some little term that we like to toss around. We do need to share the governance. That means you have part of the governance, I have part of the governance, the faculty does. And if we don't share it, we're not behaving the way a good university ought to behave. So it doesn't mean you get to weigh in on every single decision or, you know, have the biggest voice on some decisions, but you should have a voice. And we need to make sure we're listening, and the same vice versa, that you're hearing what we say and conveying it to your constituents. So, otherwise, frankly, the place doesn't function very well, and all sorts of bad things start to happen. So we should work on that. I think Nancy might be the only person I really know from prior days, but I remember Nancy very well. So I hope to get to know some of the others of you, too.
Cool. So old members know I always have a ton more questions, but again, what questions do you all have? I think those were the specific things that we had before.
Yeah. Don't be shy. I find Cornellians are not shy, especially Cornell students. And especially Cornell students from Long Island. They are not shy.
Folks have questions? All right, so I guess one of the first questions I have, Hunter, then, you know, this is round three, and you've worked with shared governance before. Thinking about how you've seen shared governance work in the past, what do you think we can learn from that in order to be more successful moving forward?
So maybe one way to think about that is, what have been some big mistakes in the past? You know, when did we get at odds with each other? Or when was there a bad miscommunication that led to some real problems? So look at a couple of cases like that and say, okay, how do we make sure we don't have another one? That would be really helpful to me because I'm sure this happened, right? I mean, there have been some mistakes made, and sometimes it's by the president or the vice president. Sometimes it's by...
Well, there's none been by the vice president.
Okay. At least for 20 years, right? Mary's been here so long, you know. But... So I like to say to Mary, you know, she's been here a long time, but she hasn't been here three times. So we compare notes.
She says, I come and I go, and she's still here.
She's still here. But really, let's look at a couple mistakes and see, you know, how we learn from them. So you probably got some favorite examples, and I think it would be good if you actually mentioned them. I don't mean today, but I mean
just
look at them and say, okay, you know, we blew that one. How are we going to make sure we don't do that again?
Sure.
So that's one suggestion.
I don't look at it as a mistake. It's a reality when we were in the recession and Mary had to make a lot of tough decisions, and then the ripple effect down to the staff level was you had a lot of scared employees that were not outreaching anymore, fulfilling their goals and moving around because they were afraid that that position might be eliminated or whatever, and we're still recovering from that.
I'm glad you raised that because that's a nasty period, you know. I mean, it's just nasty, and as you said, Mary didn't cause it and the president didn't cause it, but there it was. So it's no wonder people got scared. What, who wouldn't be scared? I'd be scared if I thought, you know, I'm next. So you just try to do the best you can under the circumstances, but they aren't nice circumstances. So that's when you really get tested as to whether you can do that well, not in the sense that everybody's happy, but at least the least bad set of decisions, if you know what I mean, because they're all going to be bad, but how do you make the least bad decision? So that's a good case in point. What did we learn from the experience? Where did we mess up, but where did we do pretty well during that time? Things are better now. How much better are they, do you think? I'm really asking. Do you think things are much better, a bit better?
They're a bit better. The cost of living certainly does go up fast.
Yeah.
It doesn't always reflect that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, in terms of the job security and things like that, what are you all feeling? Speak up. What are your colleagues feeling about? Yes.
I know my area in particular has bounced back very well.
What's your area?
I work over in the diagnostic lab by the Vet City.
Okay, so you get a lot of business.
We get a lot of business. It's been going up ever since.
So tell me about the growth there. I mean, has that been consistent growth or a couple of spurts or what?
Well, ever since the recession happened, we initiated a very aggressive advertising campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We sent a lot of people to different conferences that we usually don't go to, and that has just drawn in a lot of new business.
That's nice. So that's good. So what did you learn from that experience? What would you tell the group that was pretty good stuff to learn from?
What we really learned from that experience is that, you know, our feet was held to the fire, and we were facing a lot of layoffs. We were having people work long shifts because we didn't have the personnel, that we were able to come up with a plan to help bring in the revenue so we could actually get back to where we were.
So in other words, you were proactive, to use everybody's favorite word. You didn't just sit and wait. That's good. That's a good example. Anybody else have an example?
Tanya over here.
So I would say over the past couple of years, we've made some, or the university's made some great strides in looking at employees' interest in growing and developing themselves, so offering some new programs, mentoring opportunities so employees can kind of get in and see other opportunities that might be of interest to them and see if that's a path they want to go on. Job rotations have been very successful.
What do you mean by job rotation?
So I can share my experience. So I had an opportunity. There was an area I was interested in working in, and a couple departments away, there was someone who went on a leave, and the person in this organization moved over there to try a new job experience there. And I moved into their position so that I can get real hands-on three-month experience in that particular
situation. So why is that not disruptive to have, in other words, why doesn't that cause problems to have people moving around like that? I'd like to understand that.
So, I mean, I think it can be challenging just in terms of backfilling, and I think, you know, we have to be really careful about how we do it and make sure we don't leave a hole. So what ended up happening is because this one person went on leave, someone stepped in and backfilled their spot. I stepped in and backfilled that person's spot, which left a hole in my spot. A person on my team stepped up and took on some of my responsibilities, and we brought in a temp to fill in some of her work responsibilities.
Okay. And who was overseeing this to make sure it wasn't disrupted?
So the leaders in the different areas, so a lot of that happened through the human resource managers or the directors. So there was a lot of, I'm going to say, public conversation before all those moves happened to say, what does this look like? And obviously, you know, as you move someone into those rotational experiences, you want to make sure they have some sort of background to be able to come in. Obviously, I couldn't walk into Eric's job in the diagnostic lab and be a technician.
Right.
You know, but do the people have those skills? So for
But you're also helping people develop new skills.
Yes, exactly. And so the beauty of that is I was able to get in, as was this other person able to get in and get some real hands-on experience. And as a result, since that time, he has moved into a new position in that new area. I've moved into a position in the area I was rotating into. And then they changed the composition of my old department and how they were structuring things there to bring in a new need that they had.
So it sounds fairly complex, but it was pretty well thought out in advance.
Yeah. And we're seeing them happen lots of places on campus, which is really great. And Mary, you could probably speak more to the success of those types of programs. But.
Rotations are a way to keep top talent, but it's also a way to drop the bottom work out of an organization. So, in full disclosure, that's my area. So we were facing a pretty big cut, and so we wanted to be able to use the cut as a way to promote our top talent and not lose people out of the organization. So we committed ourselves to dropping the work out of the organization that we thought we could drop and not lose the best people out of the organization. So we've been planning using development plans, ways to do that using rotation, and it's been pretty effective.
That's interesting. So how could you drop stuff without it being really consequential?
So we use something called lean process improvement. So we take a look at our process, and we put the people that know the process in the room. They identify the work that we can get rid of that our customers, so our faculty and staff say, we hate that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like it. It doesn't help us. We would like you to drop that policy, drop that procedure, and we identify that work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the work we're dropping. So we're dropping policies, we're dropping procedures that the campus tells us we don't like, we don't need. And then we identify what that's going to do to jobs.
Wow.
And we mix that with our people's development plans, and that's how we...
Wow.
It takes,
so it worked pretty well.
It does. It works well.
So that leads me to a question to you all, if you don't mind. And this will sound probably counterintuitive to you and maybe wrong, so that's fine. But I think a fair number of faculty here now feel that over the last 10 years, 15 years, whatever, even though the staff's doing really good work and doing all kinds of stuff, more and more burden is falling on the faculty to fill out compliance forms on research, to face the regulatory machine in Washington. And they're not blaming staff. That's not their point at all. They're just saying, we have a much bigger burden than we had, so the research I'm doing now is fine, but I have less time for it because I'm spending all my time complying with federal regulations and maybe even some Cornell add-on regulations that make it worse. So this is a message that I'm hearing, and I'm believing it. What would you all say that would help me understand that better, and the role of staff in maybe thinking about it and addressing it? I know that's a real general question, but I wonder if you've got some thoughts on that.
I work in building care. My experience is once the zone came in, you know, where we split into zones, I find my staff have a lot more to do with less time because now we have a service agreement that we have to abide by, where before we didn't have a service agreement. So you get paid for work done, and it takes a lot to keep track of what the custodian
So now add on the component. How does what you just said affect faculty?
I think faculty, they don't understand that staff have more to do with less time, and they don't think it affected what they need, what they want.
Because, you see, they're feeling the same thing. They,
right.
Not to blame the staff, that's not their point.
Mm-hmm.
Their point is, now I have more to do than I did before, and less time for my real work.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody's right, then everybody's got more to do, staff and faculty.
Yes.
And why is that?
All right, so I'll add, so just for, I'm taking track of a speakers list, so I saw Jeremy in there, and then I'll add you on there, too. That's just kind of how we keep track of everything as well.
Specific to our area, one of the things that I found is over the last several years, we've been squeezed pretty tightly. We've lost positions.
Budget.
Yes, and most of it due to the provost's budget issue, I believe. But we've lost maybe 5-6 positions.
Wow.
That just, and it's through attrition. They haven't laid anyone off, but we haven't had any new hires in quite some time. So we're feeling this pressure to do more. And one of the ways that we manage to complete the job with fewer numbers is by implementing new policies that this is how things get done. These are the things that we need you to do to streamline our process.
So it's a streamlining.
Right. So now the faculty, we're being pressured to have less and less policies that faculty have to follow, but we can't reduce those when we're continually losing numbers, because the only way we can maintain the efficiency we need is by having a very formalized process.
I see.
So I see a conflict there between we need to reduce our staff so that we can save money, but in order to do that, we need to institute policies which directly affect our
So, Mary, how do we cope with that sort of thing?
Can I say this back to you? So in the service areas, what I've seen, when I look at the data, what I've seen in, say, IT, is where we've lost people are the actual service providers to faculty. So it's the person who used to go to the office and solve the problem for the faculty member or staff member. And now what you do is you put in a ticket and you wait for someone to help you. And so if you're a faculty member and your research is dependent on getting that solved, you have to sit and wait for somebody. And I don't want to speak for you, but that's what I've heard you say.
Yeah. And that's exactly
what the data shows.
At heart, we're customer service.
Yeah.
We want to be there.
Right,
as
right.
As soon as we can to help, because that's what makes my job satisfying.
Right.
To be there ready to help in a timely fashion. But as we reduce numbers and increase the amount of services we provide, that simply becomes impossible. But faculty, they don't care what the structure of the process is. They just know they're not receiving the help.
They want the help. And they want it today, not tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So this is obviously a problem that doesn't have an easy solution. I mean, this is something that's, and it's probably got different solutions in different parts of the campus, too. So it's not one size fits all, would be my guess. So that's a tough one.
Okay.
I'm in the Division of Financial Affairs, specifically for Human Services. So I would say that any more eloquently than Jeremy just did, that we see a lot of these external regulations. So our policies are built around those regulations.
Yep.
They're not ones that we just dreamed up, but that sort of the impression sometimes that a faculty or someone needing our services seems to give us. And we're as tight as we can possibly be.
What do you mean by that?
Well, people leave and we're not allowed to affect them because of budgetary issues. So when you're doing multiple jobs all day, you know, we, and I would agree, we are very much customer service oriented, but when there's one of you and many, many other people to serve, it's tough.
So the thing you two just described is right on my plate now. I don't have any answers, but it's right on my plate. And I've talked with several people, including Mary, Saul Gruner in physics, who chaired a committee recently that tried to examine this very problem. Compliance, the cost of compliance, regulatory burden, all these different phrases for it. That's the same thing. It's what you all are describing. And as I said earlier, the federal government imposes most of that, as you just did, but then we actually add to it sometimes because we're so risk averse. You know, we don't want to commit a fraud because the feds will come down on us. So we then take extra steps on our side above what the feds require to make certain that we're not making a mistake. So we've just added more cost ourselves. So we actually contribute to the burden. So what we're going to try to do, and I'm not making any promises because it's a hard problem, is look at this thing really directly. This is what's on the plate right now. Mary's involved, Joanne DiStefano's involved, others are involved, and some faculty members are involved to see if we can get a grip on this. We're not going to solve the big problem, you know, we're not. But we'd like to find five little problems we could start to solve. That would be great, because those five little problems probably affect most of you, not just three of you. So that's sort of where we are. It's pretty early, but I'm hopeful we can get at this.
I think the other thing I'll add before going there too, I think everyone, as you mentioned, is feeling this crunch, and I think sometimes the faculty look at the staff as like, why can't you do more, as opposed to saying, how can we do something together?
Right.
And I think that's the thing I would like more than anything else, is for faculty members to say, if we're all feeling this crunch, as opposed to saying, what can you do to help me out more, it's what can we all do together to figure this out.
So that's a mouthful, and we ought to try to work at this, and I wonder if we can figure out, Mary, how to help get, you know, solve the problem the way you just described, where, you know, it's not just the faculty saying over here in one meeting with me, we're overburdened, and then you all are over here in another meeting with me saying we're overburdened. So it's like competing,
right.
who's more overburdened, you know? and that's nice for everybody's psychology, but it doesn't help solve the problem. So we need to do it the way you just said.
And I think that was part of our restructuring, is before we couldn't really advocate for ourselves because, again, we didn't really know how we represent. It's like harder to show that. And now
right.
that we have that, I think it's easier for us to then connect with faculty and say, look, here's a group of people that represent the entire staff community. This isn't just like three people in the vet school, three people in hotel. Just a smattering. It's like, this is a representative group that can help push these things
right.
out.
Right.
So, and oh, sorry, I'm just going to Pilar and then Liz and Alan.
So I'm up at Vet College, and I work directly with international relations and visas and immigrations and hosting a lot of our visitors. And one thing that we did, and I work with Mary Beth Jordan and the deans directly, was my position is fairly new and working hand in hand with human resources to look at labor laws, with the deans as to the desire of how we were looking at globalization and international relations, along then with discussion with legal management and risk management, we streamlined, we implemented process, the aim, of course I still get faculty say, oh my God, Pilar is coming up with odd rules, but what I always try to start out with is I'm there to facilitate, I'm gonna help you bring someone here. There are things I can't get rid of, federal government and visas, I can't play with that. But I can facilitate, and I can go in and say, fill out this form, and if you can't fill it out, don't worry about it. I'll get the information, and we'll get to that place where
great.
We need to be.
Great.
But it's only worked by the desire of our leadership, along with the working of human resources and our chairs. And then it's having staff involved, having me there, and communicating directly with the ISO. With legal counsel and risk management, and we make decisions and get it done.
That's great.
And that's been fantastic.
So in other words, you're to use an overworked term, you're feeling a little empowered to do some stuff
completely.
On your own.
Completely.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Liz and then, oops, sorry, Alan, will you? I'm just going to defer to members first.
never mind Alan.
Never mind Alan.
But we
two things to say in response to that. That's a really good set of points. One is, this is the perennial Cornell problem. You've got the center, and then you have all these different colleges. Every college wants to do its own thing. The center is always saying, you know, we'll save a lot of money if we centralize. And the college says, oh, well, we'll kind of go along, but we know we're going to lose our autonomy. And, you know, so it's a constant battle between centralization and decentralization. It's been going on ever since Cornell was founded because we have so many colleges. So that's a perennial. But it gets at something, your remarks secondly get at something that's very interesting, and that is a couple faculty members have pointed out that when we centralize stuff and streamline and save, which sounds great, that often means that the faculty out there now have more work to do because stuff got centralized and harmonized, but now the faculty have in their own location, college, department, or whatever, to do more than they did before when it wasn't centralized and they had their own person, if you see what I mean, doing something more intimately with the faculty. Does that make sense? Well, that's interesting to me because it's sort of defeating, because on the one hand you said, great, we centralized, we saved money, look what we did. I'm all for that. But then the faculty raises the hand and says, but look what it did to me. And then this faculty member over here says, look what it did to me. So how in the world do we deal with that problem? Right. And it, but it doesn't cause that second problem I mentioned? Maybe it has to be like that. Mary, do you have some thoughts on this?
So there's a, you know, there's a thing called the service intensity matrix, but it, what it means is that there's, I know, I'm sorry, but Sumitra actually teaches on this, and, yeah. And it means that you should keep somebody close to the people that mean the most to you,
right,
or what you do.
Right.
If it's service-based, and I think sometimes we forget that. The faculty teach our students.
Right.
And the whole reason we're here is for our students. And in our zeal to try to be efficient, I think sometimes we've lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's Pilar's point about you got to have somebody there, if they're spending an
right.
hour on something that they could have been spending with a student, then we wasted their hour. And
right.
I think we're missing something here that we need to step back on, and whether that means that we have to drop something else that we're doing, I think we've kind of lost sight of some of that, and it means stepping back, and this is, there's no magic to this, stepping back administrative function by administrative function and figuring out what can you do once, because it really doesn't matter how it gets done. Just do
right.
it once and
right.
do it really efficiently. And then what really matters to the faculty, because really their time is better spent with the students. And do the things that matter the most to the faculty there at the colleges, because we are decentralized and we should stay that way
right.
for the purpose of the faculty. And I think that figuring out how to have those conversations in the most organic way with the faculty in the room is something we need to
do. So that's a great statement. I really think Mary has encapsulated this. And that's something we're not going to solve this afternoon, by the way, for next Friday. But
But that, what Mary just said, it seems to me, at least tries to get at the problem you and I were talking about. So maybe that's something we could take as a little bit of a to-do. I don't know how to frame it, but you all should maybe try to frame it as a to-do. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think that's the whole point of us restructuring ourselves as well, too, because this sounds like a communication problem in a lot of ways. Now that we are specifically assigned for things, there can be, you know, faculty members from this unit or division are feeling this. There's a person to talk to now, and then that can be brought up to the larger organization as well.
So I'm going to have to go. Just one second. Maybe one more question would be good. But I want to just stop on that one more time and say, I think if we could get at that one with your help, Mary's help, define it a little better, describe it a little better, and then come up with a few ways of addressing it. We're not going to solve the whole problem. We're just going to try to find a few things that are good steps forward. I think that would be really good. You might try to draw up a little bit of what you said in writing, I mean, so that we have something to talk about.
I've been working a little bit with the Services Streamlining Initiative in CIC. David Lipka was the interim CIO, but we had a couple of conversations. I think I will end up being somewhat involved in that.
Good.
Facilitating.
So much the better. That'd be really good. One last one. David has his hand up.
I just was going to say just an idea to throw out there, because so many staff members are saying we're doing more with less, and now faculty is saying we're doing more with less, we have less and less time. Maybe instead of looking at the local staff that supports the faculty, we should try to create a faculty compliance resource center, even if there's one in every single college, where it's two, three, maybe half a dozen staff, I doubt it, but that are specific for the faculty. Like, we are your support. We are your compliance, people to help you, so that your office, staff are not further overburdened.
So let's take that also as a suggestion and see if there's a way to. I don't want to start too many different processes, because we're going to try to do some stuff, over in Day Hall. But I really like these ideas, and I don't know exactly how we're going to move them forward. But I think some thinking by you all would be really a big help on this. This is a gigantic problem, and I've spent 5 years in D.C., and in the last two, I've worked hard with the federal government on this, and this is how far I got. And that was in spite of good efforts and a couple of really good people in OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, really good people who wanted to help, but they just can't do it because the Fed rules are so overlapping, and it's very discouraging. I think we've got a chance to make a little headway in D.C. Before the Obama administration finishes, but we have to work on this locally, because they're not going to solve our problems for us in Washington. The old idea, I'm from Washington, I'm here to help you, doesn't cut a lot of ice anymore. So thanks a lot. This is really good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
This was great. Yeah, thanks.
Can I get a brownie?
Oh, you can get as many brownies as you like.
I'm getting a brownie.
So in the remaining time that we have, I'd like to just talk about transition and kind of the election process for next year's executive group as well. Again, I'm really excited for the fact that we are finally able to do our restructuring. It's, as those of you that are currently on it right now, it's a long road, and we're here. But I think it really sets us up very well moving forward for the things that we can do. And again, as you hear from this conversation, there's opportunity here for us as well, too. So the first thing my facilitator had is just who is in the room, and if we could all at least just kind of introduce ourselves and the department that you work at and the seat that you'd be in. And then I think at least just who we know everyone, or we all know who each other are before we kind of move into transition stuff. So, I know, Linda, do you want to start down there?
I'm the model. There are a lot of smaller administration groups that, you know, have, say, 10 or 12 people in the unit, so they didn't really warrant their own rep, so we combined them together. So things like the provost's office, the president's office.
Central sort of unit.
Okay, and so we, for now,
yes.
That's the IT.
Yep.
Yes.
Right.
So
yes.
The other thing I'll mention kind of moving forward is this, again, it's an evolving list. And I think the thing that we saw is that if we don't really revisit who we represent on a regular basis, things aren't accurate. So this is what we came up with first. Again, that doesn't mean it's set in stone for eternity.
Yes.
I think it's a starting place for us as well. Sure. I want to make sure we get around to this. Sure.
So I just in response to the question also, just because you're representing a specific group, if you hear something from someone who you know who works across campus and they have an issue, you can still bring that to the table.
Yeah.
So just do that.
Introduce yourself. I would like everyone to introduce themselves anyway, because I think you served, you know what's up.
You were our communication.
I'm Matt Parcella, Alumni Affairs and Development. I will represent Alumni Affairs.
I'm Imani Allen, Residential Newsroom and Programs. I'm currently a residence hall director, and I'll be representing our campus life.
I'm Tanya Grove. I'm an organizational development consultant in organizational workforce development, and I'll be representing HR.
Okay.
So we have Carrie, do you want to introduce yourself?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay, virtual.
I'm Carrie Sandoz, and I work in the University of Communication on the Cornell website and the Cornell campus. I'm also the Director of Things, and I will be representing University Relations. And I do it from Orlando, Florida.
Awesome.
So again, we're trying new remote things.
Yeah.
This room and the room will hopefully be if we move anywhere else as well too, we'll trying to get places with WebEx as well too. So lots of good stuff.
We gotta remember here.
Exactly. Virtual thing. And again, so BJTSO, I work in Alumni Affairs and Development. I'm also with ILR, so I'll be the incoming ILR person.
I'm Tammy Shapiro. I work with Arts and Sciences Admissions and Advising, and I'll be the women's rep.
I'm Christy Long. I also work in advising in Arts and Sciences Advising at Admissions, and I'll be the Arts and Sciences representative.
I'm Corey Driscoll. I'm the Senior Operations Officer in University Relations, but I'm just a guest.
She's a frequent guest.
I'm a guest, and as a departing guest, this is my last meeting with you. My term is finished in June 30th as the employee-elected trustee. I just want to say thank you, the thoughtfulness, the care, the intelligence that this group has is immense, and I think it came out in this conversation with Hunter, who is great in drawing these things out, as you also witnessed. I think he's the best, and keep him coming as much as you can, and keep that dialogue going, because he's serious about it, and with him and Mary as a team, you've got a really strong representative body to work with, to filter out our ideas to senior leadership. So thanks very much. I'm here as the employee elected trustee. My day job is to make faculty do more compliance. very much for everything you've contributed. It's a very powerful group. It really is.
I'm Taylor Thompson. I'm up at Vet College. I will be representing the international group in the next speech.
I'm Jeremy Cruiser. I'm currently with Cal's IT, moving over to Student Services IT. I am the research tech representative.
I'm Nancy Doolittle. I write for the Cornell Chronicle and I'm the editor of Kaufman, and it's in our Kaufman role, but he's me and I'm the field member here.
I'm Shaggy Shirley, and I'm from Fisheries Services, and I'm a representative for the Business Funding Center.
I'm Sue Wilcox, and I work for Procurement Services as well, and I'm an assistant member for the group.
Hi, I'm Brandy Nicholson. I work in residential new student programs and assistant director with summer programs, and next year I'll be a non-resident.
I'm Marie Drew, so I'm also at Vet College, and I work at the Accounting Student Center, so I've probably called Kathy a few times over the years, as everyone in my office, and I am stepping down from this place.
And I'm Kevin Fitch from Vermont Health and Safety. Next is a section, radiation safety, and I will be doing health and safety.
I'm Ashu Draco. I'm Associate Director for Communications in the Department of International Programs at Cal, and I'll be representing staff who work for that society.
My name is Bob Tunde. I am president of the WAS Tunde. I'm from the Johnson School. I guess I'll be representing Johnson and other places.
Grad and law. So excellent. So again, as you see, we've really restructured ourselves a little bit, and we represent almost all of campus as well, too. Oh, sorry, John, if you want
to. I'm John Garvey, the Director of Media Relations for Cornell, and I'm just a guest here today. Thank you, guys, for letting me come.
But yeah, so the last things I'd like to talk about in kind of the 5 minutes we have remaining are kind of the next steps and transitional items as well, too. So this is the last official session of our 2015-2016 assembly. The next group will start on June the 1st. So again, our meetings are the first and third Wednesdays of the month, and the first order of business at that meeting will be to elect the new executive body. I hope you all grabbed the sheet that looks like this that has descriptions of the different officers. One of the first thing, actually, that we'll be doing at that meeting is, again, running the election for the chair. And so I will be running that election. I won't be running for chair again. So that's the first thing that we'll do, and then kind of proceed down the list moving forward to elect that executive body. I guess the last thing I'd like to do is, for the exec members that are here, just kind of talk about what the role has been and just any allow time for questions and things like that as well, too. So again, I won't read over this list for you. I think we're all more than capable of reading that as well. But I think as the chair, it's really just kind of looking at the holistic picture of what the assembly is doing, and you're also the public face then of the employee assembly to the different constituent groups as well. For me, a lot of it is moving forward is taking this new structure and making sure that we're well represented then to the other shared governance groups, to the other administrators, and just basically everyone else on campus. I think it is ripe with opportunity is what I'll say as well. But yeah, so that's the chair. Tanya, you want to talk about EVC?
Sure. The executive vice chair is basically BJ's or the chair's second-hand person. So if they're not here to chair the meeting, they'll step in and chair. You're responsible for chairing the executive committee meetings, getting the agendas out to the group, supporting the chair as needed.
So I'm currently the finance and the exec committee for this year. I did also hold a vice chair for internal operations, so I can talk about that one because we don't currently have one.
Yep.
It's quite an interesting added bonus. Already it's fantastic being in shared governance and in the employee assembly. Taking advantage of the executive board of the EA allows you to even just take it to the next level with more interaction, more meetings. Yes, obviously a little bit more work on your part. you have to meet, what is it we meet every other
Tuesday? We meet opposites. So if there's if the EA as an assembly meets first and third Wednesdays, the executive group tries to meet the second and fourth Wednesdays just
right.
to do the alternating piece there.
So you are meeting a little bit more. We added some flexibility that we did one in person, one
sure.
teleconference.
Yep.
You know, for the finance chair, obviously you're going to be looking at the numbers. You're going to be communicating directly with the office of the assemblies. This last year, though, we had a lot more work towards the elections and the structure, so it probably didn't focus too much financially as what we could do. You know, you're going to be looking at attempting, we're now 25, so perhaps how the food and our catering affects how our numbers look at, how we utilize the funds to perhaps get, we've discussed this in promoting ourselves, name tags, badges, some sort of identification that just puts us out there. So that would be something the finance and individual can do. For the internal operations one, it's a little, you have to be really willing to reach out and to draft and bring in and get individuals on board. We have a lot of committees that are part of the employee assembly. We have a lot of committees that are connected to the other shared governance assembly, the university assembly, grad student liaisons, and you need to bring people on board. We need those positions filled because then we need to have employee voice represented. If you're not willing to call on people and explain what those committees are, then we're not going to get them filled, and therefore we're not going to have an employee voice at that table. So for the internal operations one, it's a lot of, you know, just
I think it's a lot of connecting. So
yeah,
it's connecting with the different
yeah.
staff members and figuring out what people are interested in doing and how do you best fulfill those roles
yeah.
for them as well. The last two that I'll talk about here, the Vice Chair of Communication, again, responsible for doing the communications from the EA, working closely with the Office of Assemblies to put out the EA update. I'm sure some of you have seen that. I'm trying to do it monthly. I'm going out to the entire staff community as well as just any other communications pieces that we have. I'm the parliamentarian that also helps us understand our charter, the bylaws, and just how we function as an organization. So I guess I'll stop talking there and see if there are questions from folks. Again, the biggest thing I'll say is we have a new assembly, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for us. And I think in addition to serving the general body, we also ask every member to also serve on either committee or the task force, just because, again, that's where a lot of the other work happens with the organization as well, too.
And if you don't have questions now, you can feel free to reach out to any one of us between now and June 1st, and we can
yep.
give you some really in-depth information and answer questions. Yep. Or if you have questions now, we can do so as well.
Cool. So if no questions, the way if you'd like to run for one of these positions, you can either contact me directly, so since I'm chairing that meeting in the elections process, or talk to the Office of Assemblies as well, too. And then at least we can do, you can nominate either yourself, nominate someone else, we'll collect those names. Or again, you can nominate yourself or someone else at that June 1st meeting as well.
Yeah.
So. Correct.
Every year.
There you go, folks. Cool. Again, thank you, everyone. I'm really excited for this upcoming year. So it's exciting to see new faces here as well, too.
Motion to adjourn.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. This is my last meeting as chair, so I'll entertain a motion to chair the final meeting there.
Motion to chair.
All right, motion to chair. Adjourn. I'm like, my brain is falling apart there. Is there a second for that?
Second.
Okay, anyone opposed? All right, by unanimous consent, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.